Good to have you guys here again this evening. We're going to move right into our second lesson of our America's Christian Heritage series. I hope that you enjoyed. There are lessons on the back there on that table just before you came in. There are more outlines for tonight's lesson. And if you somehow or for some reason you lose any one of them, let me know and I'll go ahead and keep the extras on a week-to-week basis. I am thankful that you guys are here and I appreciate your faithfulness in coming to church in general. Now that Bob's here, can we get started now, Bob?
All right.
And so appreciate your faithfulness in general. At the beginning of each class in the following week, I'll ask you just a few questions of the week before and just see if anybody in general remembers them. But here's what I want you to do. I'm not concerned about facts. I'm not concerned about figures. I'm not concerned about the date he sailed. If you remember that, the year. You remember that, yeah? You'll remember that. I'm not so concerned about that as I am you just being able to see how God worked in the history of our nation. That's most of where my interest is as far as our learning in this class. And I'd like for you guys to be able to pick up on a lot of that type of thing. For example, you've heard that history is His story. It's the story of how God has worked in history and in the lives of the human race. And as we do that, I want you to notice and to recognize the fact that indeed it is His story. I'm not so concerned about a year that He did something as much as I am about how He worked in a way that was very obvious and evident. God works in the lives of everybody, and God works in all circumstances. Now, we don't always know how He's working in everybody's lives and in all circumstances, but there is no doubt that God does work. As we study America's Christian heritage, we're looking at what we would consider to be the highlights of God's working in the history of our nation. But to be honest with you, all we're looking at is highlights. It would be impossible for us to discover and to study every detail of how God has worked. For one thing, it all hasn't been recorded. And so there's no way we could know everything, but we do want to study a little bit of it. Does anybody remember what was an evident way in which God worked in the life of Christopher Columbus to get actual approval after years, over a dozen years of seeking approval from magistrates, kings, and queens? Finally, he came to Spain on a very particular day. Does anybody remember about what had taken place on that day that was just the right time? That's correct. It was the day. And you remember the king and the queen, Ferdinand and Isabella, they desired to do something because of the victory. And it was Christopher Columbus's coming along that gave them the idea that this is something that we could do for God as thanks. To give God thanks, we could rediscover land for Him and dedicate the land to Him. And that was one of the things that God truly worked in a great way. Now, they had been out sailing for nearly 3 months and had not sighted land. The other ships had come to the place where they were preparing to turn around, to go back. There was a mutiny, nearly. But Christopher Columbus was granted an X amount of time. Does anybody remember about how many? Three more days. And anybody remember about when it was that they discovered land? It was at the start of the third day. And so at the end of the day, it would have been time up, and it was at about 2 a.m. of that day that they were sailing in and hitting hard and getting ready to come to the land. And so I want you to really take note of the ways in which God evidently worked. And what we want to do today is, now that we've talked about Christopher Columbus discovering the New World, is we want to specifically talk about the pilgrims, and the title of this is Pilgrims, Religious Freedom, and the Gospel. And the truth that we want to discover is that America was founded for religious freedom and the Gospel. Plymouth, Massachusetts is going to be a place that we're going to be looking at quite a bit this evening because of its significance to the pilgrims' arrival. But we first want to talk about how Plymouth, Massachusetts was prepared for the arrival of the pilgrims. America was a land at this time that was populated by the Indians. The Indians populated, they were called the Indians, they populated before the Spanish, French, or English ever arrived. Now, many of the Indians actually lived on the eastern coast of what would be the United States of America. And from everything we could tell, these Indians oftentimes, most of the time, were very hostile towards anybody that would come onto the shore. They were considered more foreign invaders. But it's no surprise that that would be the case. Because as we talked about last week, there were times when Englishmen or others would come from the other world, and their intention of coming to the United States of America would be to take the Indians as slaves, to be barbaric in their actions, to steal the goods and the jewels and the gold and anything else the Indians had. So this caused the Indians on the eastern coast, many of them, to actually be very antagonistic. And this was the case up and down most of the eastern seaboard as the Indians were. But we want to specifically talk about an area in which it is evident that God worked. And as we look, what we have in front of us right here is we have the area of Cape Cod and Plymouth and all of that would be in this area. This is where the arrival we're going to talk about landed, where they made land. And you can kind of see how it is in relationship to the United States. Now, others had tried coming in this way. And in fact, the pilgrims themselves thought that they were going to be making land in Virginia, but that wasn't what happened. They actually ended up further north than what they had intended to reach land. But we believe that it was the providence of God, because what you find right here, and this word, or I put it down here, is difficult to pronounce. I'm just going to say does anybody know, by the way? Wampanoag is what I was thinking. So this land, the Wampanoag, was actually a loose federation of several tribes of Indians. They did have one chief who oversaw them, but they weren't a tight-knit single tribe. They were a loose tribe of Indians, the Wampanoag were. Does anybody know just by memory, anybody who was famous from that, from this loose federation of the Wampanoag? Anybody, just by chance? All right, I just was curious. Okay. Now, as part, and you'll hear more about that later. I just want to see if anybody knew that immediately. This is what would be considered their loose federation of territory. Part of this territory was the Patuxet territory, which is right in the Cape Cod area. Now, this is very significant because remember, when the pilgrims came over, we'll talk more about that later, but when they came over, their intent was to come into Virginia, and they were actually sailing under charter to come start a new territory within Virginia. But they came further north than they thought, and by accident ended up in the Patuxet territory. This is very significant because years before the pilgrims arrived in the Patuxet territory, from 1614 to 1616, a mysterious plague actually came in and took over this tribe, the Patuxet tribe that was in this area. This killed every man, woman, and child. In fact, the Patuxet suffered a 100% mortality because of what came through. So we now believe today that it would be something like smallpox. And we believe that it hit them because a few years before, 1614 to 1616, some Englishmen made their way into the territory, ended up taking some of the Patuxet slaves, and ended up taking them back to England. But when they left with them these diseases that the immune systems of these Indians were not prepared for, and hence it completely wiped out an entire tribe. We're going to talk about it later, but one of the men who was taken as a slave after the pilgrims arrived ended up showing up back on the scene with somebody else who was trying to discover land. And we're going to talk about his significance. He was a Patuxet that survived only because he wasn't there when the plague broke out. His name was Squanto. And we're going to talk more about him in a little bit. But this is very significant because remember, the eastern seaboard was filled with Indians that were hostile to foreign invaders. And what happens is you have an entire region of people that are completely wiped out, and in which all of the other surrounding areas refuse to come inhabit, because to them it was some type of judgment of a god, and it was a place that you simply did not go to. Something terrible happened there. And it was actually left vacant. Nobody lived there. And this just so happens to be the place that the pilgrims are going to arrive at completely empty, without the war and the battles that most other invaders would have found. That's one of the ways in which you don't have to know a date and you don't have to know a time. But you can definitely look at this and see that there was a providential hand of God involved in not only the fact that the pilgrims came over, but where they landed, even though to them it was unintentional. But to God, He knew. And that first is the significance of the land that they ended up arriving at. Now, what I want to do is I want to go over the pilgrims. I don't know how familiar you are with the pilgrims, and the pilgrims will be much like Christopher Columbus in the way that you've probably heard positive and you've heard negative. And I'll say this again, and I'll say it every week. Please understand that the people and the groups we are studying, I am not claiming are 100% perfect and are not claiming that they are 100% evil. I'm claiming they were men and they were women, just like you and I are. And so just because I mentioned the pilgrims, or even Squanto, or Christopher Columbus, doesn't mean that I am hailing them to be the greatest Christian of their time. I'm simply saying that they were a piece of a puzzle that was used by a sovereign God to bring about the discovering of the United States of America. So let's talk about the pilgrims. The pilgrims were a people who wanted one thing, and what they wanted was religious freedom. The thing I like about the pilgrims is that we can discover a lot about the pilgrims from their very own writings. Probably the most popular pilgrim that you're ever going to hear about, and if you want to do further study on the pilgrims, you'll want to look up the name William Bradford. If you Google his name or you look for books, there will be several books that are written about him. But there is one thing that he did that was invaluable to the history of our nation. And what he did was he actually kept a diary. And the diary simply said at the top of Plymouth Plantation. And that was the name. And you can actually find these books, whether it be on Amazon or if you Google it, or even at various bookstores. It's fairly inexpensive to find now. Of Plymouth Plantation is the work of William Bradford. It is basically his diary or his journal of how God worked in the hearts and the lives and in the group known as the Pilgrims. And so through his writings, we can find out a tremendous amount of the Pilgrim history. For example, from them and other historians, we find out that the Pilgrims were originally from England. They're originally from England, and they would have been members of the Church of England. However, in his own writings, William Bradford indicates, that around the turn of the 17th century, there was a group of very devout pilgrims or Christians who believed that the church was being corrupted from within and without, and wanted to separate from the church. One of the things that led them to the place where they felt like they had to separate from the Church of England was that they believed that no person should ever have the title head of the church except Jesus Christ himself. They believed Jesus Christ was the only one who could be given the title the head of the church. That actually, you're going to find out in a moment, was a problem. The second thing that they believed is that true worship services involved preaching, teaching, singing, and free praying. What you and I would think of as more of a worship service. When the Church of England would have actually been closer to like a Catholic church atmosphere, where it would have been more repetition, more formal. And the separatists, or I'll call them the pilgrims, got to the place where they felt like they were going to need to separate from the Church of England. I think it all came to a head in about 1603 and 1604 when King James I took the throne. And when King James I took the throne, he began to make himself the head of the church. And this flew in the face of the pilgrims' mindset that only God was the head of the church. So King James I himself began to bring persecution upon these who were trying to change this church. And this is what King James I said. I will make them conform themselves, or else I will harry them out of the land, or else do worse. And they knew that they had to make the choice. Were they going to stay in the Church of England, or were they going to separate? But if they were going to separate, there would still be the need for them to actually leave the territory. So that's what they did. The place that they decided they wanted to go to was Holland. Holland was a place that they believed that they would have the religious freedom that they were looking for. Now, I have in the bottom of your page, letter D, that in 1604, the persecution became great. The pilgrims desired to leave. Holland is where they were going to. And the pilgrims, when they arrived at Holland, were finally able to worship God freely. But the freedom came with many grievances. Slave-like labor of them. Unknown language. Premature aging due to the slave-like labor. And they were losing their youth to worldly Dutch influence. And after years of this, they came to the place where they were experiencing religious freedom in Holland, but they believed that this was not the long-term solution. So, by 16 and 19, the pilgrims, while people were continuing to migrate from England to Holland to be a part of this religious freedom, the pilgrims now numbered anywhere from 400 to 500 people. And they finally got to the place where they determined it was their calling now to move to the new world. And at the top of the page, I have, in William Bradford's own writing, the four reasons why they came to the decision to go from Holland to the new world. This is what he said. First, their life was so hard that almost no others were coming from England to join them now. Second, their life was aging them prematurely and was debilitating that, and was so debilitating that if the time came when they would have to move again, they might not physically be able to do so. Third, their children were also being worn down, and many were being drawn away from the lures of the world around them. Fourth, they had cherished a great hope, an inward zeal of at last playing a part, if only a stepping stone for others, in the carrying forth of the light of Christ to remote parts of the world. And so indeed the pilgrims, using these four reasons, decided that it was now time to leave Holland and to go to the new world. But you're talking now about 400 to 500 people making a very lengthy journey. And you're not talking about all strong men. You're talking about men, wives, and boys, and girls. How would this be accomplished? It's interesting, if you study the writings of Bradford and other historians, the pilgrims put a tremendous amount of prayer before they came to the place to decide that this was the right thing to do. But indeed, they finally did come to that. And on August the 5th of 1620, a small group of pilgrims left Holland and were now headed to the New World. The Virginia colony is where they were intended to head to, aboard the Mayflower. Now, you're not going to believe this, but after calling all over this nation, even nearly the world, I made a couple of calls, I was able to come up with an actual photograph of the Mayflower. And that was the Mayflower as it sailed on the high seas. I'm just kidding. It's not a real photograph. I told somebody that earlier today. I was showing the slides. I told somebody that. I guess they thought I was serious. And they said, really, do you think they could have come up with a picture that is in color before they even had black and white? And I said, I'm just joking. I'm sorry. I was just a joke. But this is a drawing, and a lot of these, some of these are going to be prints that I'm showing you, are prints that are actually in the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. And so some of these, and so if you look up the Library of Congress online, and you look at some of their prints regarding the Mayflower, Christopher, or the Pilgrims, a lot of these will come up. And so it was in 1620 that they decided they were going to start to head west, and they were going to reach the new land. Virginia Colony is where they wanted to go. After 3 months of continuous storms, it really was a horrible, horrible ride for them on the way over. After 3 months of continuous storms and treacherous waters, the Mayflower sights the northern tip of Cape Cod, which would have been, which would have been the northern tip of Cape Cod, would have been right in this area. And they have finally sighted the northern tip of Cape Cod. I want to show you another. After they've sighted it, and they actually went up and down the coast, so they're looking for what would have been the best place to land, they decided that the Cape Cod area was the place that they were going to come on shore. And again, a photographer who was hidden in the bushes snapped a picture of them as they were coming on shore. Now, I want to, let's see, I have one more picture that I want to show you. This is just, again, Library of Congress has this. This is supposedly them coming on shore. Now, I want to show you one thing. Has anybody ever been in the Cape Cod, Plymouth, Massachusetts area? Has anybody ever been? You guys have been out there? Lived out there, right? Did you live out for a while, kind of? And so I want to show you something. Now, I'm going to show you this video just because of the interesting aspect of it regarding Plymouth, Massachusetts, which would have been where they first came on shore, where they would have ended up establishing the Plymouth Plantation, I should say. I want to show you a little video, but before I show you the video, let me give you a disclaimer. This video was a video that I downloaded from online. This is not a historian. This is just somebody who had a video camera and showed things I would like for you to see. I am not saying he's a historian, even a Christian. I am simply saying that he is going to show you interesting things. So don't take his commentary as being the Bible, okay? I'm going to stop him right there because he just kind of starts talking. But I wanted you to see this so that you understood that something you're going to see through the course of this whole study, that as you study even the monuments, and as you study the... Yes?
Do you know the significance of the Roman soldier?
He did not say anything about it. Do you know?
No.
No, I don't. I just looked up this because I want you to see that the monuments that we have, both in Washington, D.C., and in various places that have to do with the history of our nation, inscribed all over them are principles that always point back to a faith in God. And there's no possible way that anybody who is interested in history enough to go see these things could ever say that there is no such thing as God having a part in our history. My wife and I, for the last few years, have made our way out to Washington, D.C., and we'll be going out again, I told you, this summer. And I'm going to actually show you pictures. I don't know if you've been there or not, but we're going to show you pictures that I've taken of various things that are just irrefutable evidences of the fact that when they were erected, there was no doubt the intent was to let people know that our nation was a Christian nation founded on Christian principles. And this is just one of the things right here that I wanted to show you regarding the Plymouth Plantation and something that is put up now to teach us that faith did have a tremendous part in what our nation was founded upon. So let's jump now back to our lesson. Letter H is where we're at. They've now made land. The pilgrims realized, letter H, that they made land north of their desired arrival at the Virginia colony. Now, this posed a little bit of problem because that was the charter that they were sailing under. So in order to maintain control, they had to come up with their own self-governing document, something that their shipmen and the pilgrims themselves would all abide by, because they didn't make land onto the Virginia colony like they thought. So what they did was they met together and they decided that they would come up on November 11, 1620, with what is now called the Mayflower Compact. It's signed into law November 11, 1620. This document would be the first self-governing document of our country. And it's interesting because if you look at the very first major self-governing document, it was essentially handwritten, and you can see that it starts off with, "In the name of God, amen." And we'll read through the rest of it in just a moment. But there is no doubt that this document was also a clear indication that the pilgrims who came over were a people who were intended to come in the name of God for religious freedom and for the spreading of the gospel message. The Mayflower Compact, if you wanted to see it today, you could not see in the United States. I wish you could. And I guess there are reasons more than what I know. I wish you could see it in Washington, D.C. when you went down, and I wish they would have that with some of the historical documents that they possess in the Archives Museum or something along those lines. But they actually don't. They have it in Massachusetts, in Boston is where they have it, and that's where. So we can't see it unless you go out there. Now, what I want to do is I want to read for you the Mayflower Compact, and it's there in your lesson outline. It says, "In the name of God, amen. We whose names are underwritten the loyal subjects of our dread sovereign, Lord King James, by the grace of God of Great Britain, France, and Ireland, King, Defender of the Faith, etc., have undertaken for the glory of God and advancement of the Christian faith, and honor of our King and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do by these present solemnly and mutually in the presence of God and of one another, covenant and combine ourselves together into a civil body politic for our better ordering and preservation and furtherance of the ends aforesaid, and by virtue hereof to enact, constitute, and frame such just and equal laws, ordinances, acts, constitutions, and offices from time to time as shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general good of the colony, unto which we promise all due submission and obedience, in witness whereof we have hereunder subscribed our names at Cape Cod, the 11th of November, in the year of our Lord Sovereign, Lord King James, and England, France and Ireland, the 18th, and of Scotland, the 54th, Anno Domini, 1620. And you find the signing of the very first major document in the history of the United States of America. And what you find is that this major document indicates that as they came over here with a Christian faith and with the intent for the glory and the advancement of the Christian faith. Now, what I want you to do is to once again tie in what you've just read in the Mayflower Compact with what we discussed last week in the life of Christopher Columbus. You remember that Christopher Columbus came over because his name was Christopher Columbus, meaning Christ bearer. And he believed that it was God's plan for his life to discover new land, and that on that new land, the gospel would be proclaimed and the Christian faith would be advanced. Now, it was the will of God that Christopher Columbus not actually make land onto what we consider the United States of America. He stayed out on the islands. And I explained to you last week that I believe that was due because of the influence of the religion that he had. Now, Christopher Columbus discovered that years later, you find another group coming in. The other group that came in would be closer to faith to what we are than would have Christopher Columbus have been. And it is this group that actually makes land onto a territory, and their same stated desire is that they come in the name of God, and they come for the advancement of the Christian faith. Now, understand this. How is it possible for anybody to claim that this is not a Christian nation, nor that this nation was not founded on Christian principles? The discovering of the New World, period, was for the advancement of the Christian faith. And the pilgrims who entered into our shores stated in our first major document signed that they were here and that they had arrived for the advancement of the Christian faith. Anybody who studies Christopher Columbus or even the pilgrims has to come to the conclusion that our nation was founded because of visionaries who believed that in this land they could find religious freedom that could be promoted to everybody who lived there. There is no way that anybody could get around that. Now, the pilgrims, what was the thing that you know of from your mind in history that they were most known for after they made landfall here? Is there something that they started, a tradition perhaps? Thanksgiving. Excellent. You remember. Thanksgiving took place just 1 year later. Now, let me explain to you some of the significant things that took place. I want to go back to a scene that I showed you just here in this section. You remember that the Patuxets, I had told you, had left this area absolutely deserted with nobody present. As they made land shore and they ended up discovering this land with nobody there, they found it deserted and they decided that this would now be where they would have their Plymouth plantation. However, what would they have to live on and how would they farm the land? There were still all kinds of questions that had to be answered. One of the immediate blessings was this, was the fact that when the Patuxet were completely wiped out by this, what we believe would be smallpox, all they left behind was a stockpile preserved, the way they knew how to do it, of corn. And so as soon as the pilgrims arrive on the land, they immediately have food that is ready for them, the corn. That is a tremendous blessing. And that is something that does not happen by coincidence. Now, once that ran out, and it would, they would have to come to the place where they themselves knew how to farm the land, till the land in this new territory with this new soil and this new terrain. They needed somebody who knew the area well enough to help them to be able to learn how to live in this type of area. They needed somebody who used to live there but perhaps didn't die in the plagues. They didn't die in the smallpox. Who was the man, do you think, that was taken away by slaves, to be a slave, and then ended up, after years, finding his way back to this territory and finding the pilgrims there? His name was Squanto. You've heard of him. You've heard of Squanto. He ends up right back in this area. And just at the time that the pilgrims needed food, and just at the time that they needed to learn to till the land, Squanto appears on the scene. And William Bradford, in his diaries, will say that he believes that Squanto is a godsend. God provided Squanto for them. And it was Squanto who taught them how to farm and to farm the land, to produce and to make their own corn. It was Squanto who taught them how to kill the fowl and to the deer and all of the different things that were provided based on that specific area. Not only that, but it was also Squanto who would provide, intercession that would bring 20 years of peace with all surrounding Indian tribes. How would he do that? Because he used to be one of them. But because he was a slave taken to England, he learned the language. So now he was basically a man who knew the Indian tribes, but who also knew the pilgrims and their English, and was ended up being a man perfectly supplied by God to make intercession for the pilgrims and all of the surrounding areas. And indeed, that's exactly what he did. And they ended up becoming allies when everybody else who tried coming on shore found opposition, antagonism, and war, bloodshed, except for the pilgrims. They didn't have those same problems. It's as though God divinely and sovereignly provided for them a place that they could come on shore. And Squanto ended up being key to that. And he was. Now, you know that it was not easy, right? You remember from your history. When the pilgrims arrived, they did have the food available to them. And you also know that when the pilgrims arrived, they also had Squanto's help after a period of time. But still, things were not easy. The winters were very hard and difficult. They were challenging. And lives were lost through the process of trying to establish this plantation. But one of the things that we continue to celebrate today that we have lost the fact of is Thanksgiving, like you just mentioned a few moments ago. Thanksgiving, first celebrated, it was interesting because I was reading through it last night through some of Bradford's writings, and I told my wife, it said that for Thanksgiving they had killed five deer. They killed five deer, and they had this deer there for Thanksgiving, and they had corn. Bradford said that they had so much plenty on that day like they hadn't had before. And they didn't call it Thanksgiving, but it was a celebration between the pilgrims and some of the surrounding tribes that had brought members to the celebration. So you had the pilgrims and you had some Indians coming together and having one big celebration that would become, and yes, wild turkey were killed. Everybody always thinks, where did turkey from? Wild turkey was also one of them. And so it was one of those things that they celebrated that became a tradition that we continue to celebrate today. Now what I want to do is, and the pilgrims in their life, you could go on and on and on. In fact, I had a history, I have it in my office, of the Plymouth Plantation and the pilgrims all through the years. And there's so much that you could spend a lot of time studying them. But what I want to show you is that the truth number two was that America was founded for religious freedom and the gospel. That's the main thing I want you to see. Remember, I'm not concerned about dates, I'm not concerned about times. I want you to see the hand of God involved in his story. And as you look back at this story of the pilgrims, you'll notice that you can see the hand of God involved in several different ways. First of all, you see the hand of God involved in such a way that this territory was completely prepared for the arrival of these pilgrims. Yes.
Approximately how big was that territory?
You know what? I can't tell you that, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. As far as this territory in itself, I'm not sure. I'm sure I could find it for you, but I don't know it off the top of my head. But you do notice, yeah, I wish I could tell you. Yeah, it's not a big territory. There's plenty for them, and plenty for them in the space that they even created other things within there, but it was not a large area. But I want you to see that in this territory was completely prepared. Now, here's what I want to tell you. When I say that, and when you tell somebody else that, as you discuss the Pilgrim's Landing, the first Thanksgiving and these things, their mind may immediately go to the fact that where they might say, well, are you telling me that God completely wiped out an entire tribe of Indians, murdered them off to be able to supply this territory for the pilgrims? And honestly to that, I say no. I say that God knew exactly what would take place. And I say that even when bad and horrible things happen, God can turn around and make them good. And this is exactly what I would talk about. I am not saying that God ordered the Englishmen to come in and to take some of them slaves. But what I am saying is that when they came in to take them slaves, one of the things that they did is they took with them one person who would end up being the trained godsend for the pilgrims years later. And I don't believe that's an accident. I believe that all of that was within the knowledge and plan of God. They completely wiped out the area and left the area completely available for the arrival of the pilgrims. Where were the pilgrims even intending to arrive at that location? Absolutely not. But what you can see as you study history is you can see that God works in ways then that He even works now. Do the best things that we think are the best always happen as we would want them to happen in our lives? Absolutely not. But you can rest assured, just as you've seen God work in history, that God works even when you don't believe He is. Had they arrived in a different territory area, things may not have turned out the way they ended up turning out. But you can see that God completely prepared an area for them, and through the preparing of that area, you also find a man by the name of Squanto who was completely prepared for you as well. Somebody did try to come up with a drawing of Squanto, and I was going to show it to you, but I figured we would have women here, and you know how the Indians dressed, and so I did not want to show you the picture of Squanto. But that was one of the things that you see God working. Now, they arrive on the land. The fact that there was corn immediately available for them, stored in such a way that the Indians knew, another act in which you see the hand of God working. You just cannot deny that. As they arrived and got to the place where they needed more assistance to learn how to live on this land, God provides Squanto to them, returning back from what Squanto would have seen as slavery and oppression. But basically what it was God preparing him for what he was going to be doing with the pilgrims. It almost sounds in similar, not completely, but similarities within that and the story of Joseph, where Joseph was sold into slavery, and Joseph got to the place where he believed that things may have been going bad for them, but he was faithful, and God ended up providing him as one who would save the nation of Israel. It's very similar to the life of Squanto. Now the pilgrims come on and they establish a tradition known as Thanksgiving. And it is on this tradition known as Thanksgiving that we continue to celebrate today. But that as we celebrate, nobody probably truly considers the significance of what the first Thanksgiving was. And it was this. It was a group of people known as the pilgrims who were thanking God for the opportunity that they had to arrive safely after horrendous travel onto this new world, and then to be able to spread the gospel and establish a Christian faith on this continent. And for that, they invited their neighbors. For that, they had a feast. And for that, they worshiped. As part of the first Thanksgiving Day, there was singing of hymns. As part of this first celebration, there would have been a church, what we would consider a church-type service. But it is none of these things that you hear today with Thanksgiving. So as you study the pilgrims, I want you to understand and just remember that the pilgrims came for the establishment of religious freedom and the furtherance of the gospel. And you can see the working of the hand of God in many instances simply by their arrival, their establishment, and then what they would set up as traditions within our nation. Now that's the pilgrims, religious freedom and the gospel. Next week, we're not going to be meeting because I will... Are we? Yes. Yes. I will be here next week. I will not be here the week after. Next week, we are going to be just talking about the Puritans. And many people may get the Pilgrims and the Puritans somewhat confused. But there were very key differences between the two. And what you're going to find is that they both brought with them uniquenesses that formed the foundation of what our nation is today. And I'll show you that next week. And one of the interesting things you're going to see next week is that many of the Puritan writings, as far as their legal documents, find nearly exact phrasing within many of the founding documents of the United States of America. And it'll be interesting when we talk about the Puritans, their mindset, their philosophy, their beliefs, and then you can see how those transferred right into the founding of our nation and how many believe they were actually referenced and resources at the Constitutional Convention in which they were trying to establish the Constitution. We're going to tie a lot of that together through the Pilgrims. I am not a historian. I'll say that every week. I am just somebody who enjoys history. I am somebody who just decided to take several books and read them and present them in a systematic way. I wish that the knowledge I had was more immense. I wish I had more. And every time I read more on it, I actually learn more. But I do not know it all. And I wish I did, especially in this area, because there was irrefutable proof just with what we talk about that our nation was, you could see the working of God in our nation. And it's irrefutable. It truly is. Now, what I want to do is just continue to build that up. And at the end of all 9 lessons, you will have the strongest case of historical facts and historical stories to demonstrate that indeed our nation was founded on Christian principles from the discovering of the world to the founding of our documents. Does anybody have any questions that I may not know now but that you would possibly like for me to find out for next week? Yes?
Isn't it true that the sailors that brought the Pilgrims over were criminals, condemned criminals?
Yes. That's interesting. I didn't mention that. But the sailors that brought them over, yes, they were just basically like almost like mercenaries that were hired by the Pilgrims. They actually had to come up with an agreement that they would stay here with the Pilgrims for a certain period of time. The Pilgrims didn't like the agreement that they had to come up with to get a ride on their ship. It was both the Mayflower and the Speedwell were the two. But the Speedwell had leaking problems and had to turn back almost immediately, with a lot of the inhabitants, the people that were going to come as well. But the mercenaries, so to speak, did give them religious freedom when they arrived here. And because that was the most important thing, they ended up signing agreement with them. But yes, many of them were actually very vile and filthy men. In fact, we're told that the conditions of their coming were actually so horrible. Like I said, the seas were so bad that there were actually oftentimes where the Pilgrims were just underneath this ship and where they would stay sitting there for days and days. We're talking about horrible conditions where the ship was so bad they had to be underneath, sit there and just to talk about seasickness and the need for bodily functions. It was a horrific time. But the interesting thing, the story is, and I found it in several different accounts, that there was one sailor who said to them that I cannot wait until I get to throw one of your dead bodies overboard. And actually told them this. And the interesting thing is that not one pilgrim died in the journey. But there was one who died on the journey. And I'll give you one guess as to who that one who died was. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I completely forgot to mention that, Phil. But yes, you're absolutely correct, as they were not people who, the sailors themselves were not people who were with the Pilgrims in their beliefs, practices, or ways. They were basically in it for the discovering of land and the money that they would get out of it. So, yes, that is correct.
I think the first year didn't like half of them died.
Yes, immediate, yeah.
What was the educational background of William Bradford? Was he an attorney?
William Bradford, I wish I could tell you the specific. I wish I had it with me. I would have brought my paper as I could. William Bradford was indeed a highly educated man. He really was. He was not the original leader of them. When they were in Holland, William Bradford was not their leader. When they went from Holland even to America, William Bradford was still not their leader. He was actually elected to become like the governor of this colony. And I believe for every year until he died, which would have been, I think, 30 years, he served all but like maybe 3 to 5 terms, 1-year terms, he was not the governor. Every other one, he was. He was a man who was very well respected the entire time, and as soon as he arrived, was a man who stepped up as a leader amongst them. But typically, they would have been led, like in Holland, by their pastor primarily, by the one. But they had to decide when some were staying in Holland and some were coming, who's going to stay with the people, who's going to be able to feed them spiritually. And I believe it was through all of that that there was a transitioning of who the leader was going to be. But soon after their arrival in America, William Bradford was elected. And from everything that I can tell, he was a brilliant, brilliant man, and seems to have had a real taste of that something historical was happening. But I wish I could tell you what specific he was. Yeah.
But that last time then, from 1492 to when they decided to come.
In the 16s, yeah. 16.
So progress must have been happening during that whole time. I'm very history challenged.
Sure. A lot of it. Yeah, a lot of it would have been up and down. Some of it up and down the eastern, like the Virginia colony had already been established. The English had already started to make their way here. The French had already started to make their, and colonies were already beginning to be established. Now, the interesting thing about the Pilgrims is their desire was religious freedom. They didn't necessarily want to come to America and end up under in a colony that was sponsored by England, where James the First, so to speak, would still have control over their religious expressions. So the fact that they ended up in a colony where they had to actually say, this is just us. We have to come up with our own new basic compact, the Mayflower. That was really kind of a sovereign act of God on their part. That was an evidence of the fact that you see God working. But yes, there was lots of progress. There were already territories being established. There were already people coming over. It just so happens that they ended up further north than most of them. It was. It really was. And that's exactly what they didn't want. They didn't want to find that again. That's why the fact that they did not end up there was really an evidence that God was working. Yeah. Anyway, that's why they had to come up with their own new Mayflower Compact, because they were outside of the rule of England. Yeah. Yes. You know, I actually read that right. I believe, and that was my initial thought. But I think that was more of a term that was used. I'm not saying for sure, but I think that was just a term that was used to describe him. Nowadays, the way our minds think, they're a little bit cynical. You know, our mind seems like as a derogatory term, but I just think it was one of the things. I don't think that they would have intended it in that sense at all.
Context where, you know, it says in the Bible
that you're a fear of God. Yeah, that type of thing. Yeah. Anybody else? I hope you guys find this interesting. And what you're going to find is the closer we get to where we are today, the actual more interesting it becomes. And one of the amazing things is next week, and then as we discuss the Constitution, I will line up for you different documents regarding the Puritans and so forth in the coming weeks and let you see them together. Does anybody actually own a small hand copy or anything of the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence? You have that, Bob? You guys have some in the back? You guys have? Somebody raise your hand here. You have one? Okay. That's good. I'll tell you when you'll want to bring it, because most of what we're going to do in tying the two together will actually be when we discuss the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Next week we'll just set a foundation for it, and I'll make some comments as to that fact. So. All right, anybody else have any questions? Thank you so much, and I hope that this is handy to you. And listen, let this just pique your interest. You know, really, there's lots of study materials out there. And if you'll pick up Of Plymouth Plantation, I know that you would probably really enjoy that reading. All right? There you are, even 5 minutes till 8. Tell everybody this is the class to be. We get out early.